This is the Pastor Podcast with Randy and Andy. Andy Payton is the lead pastor at Methodist Temple United Methodist Church in Evansville, Indiana. Randy Moore is associate pastor at Methodist Temple. Their goal is to see Christ in everything and everyone.
Welcome into the podcast, friends. I'm Pastor Randy Moore. As always, I'm with Pastor Andy Payton. And in the middle of the week here, catching up, and it's good to be with you, Pastor Andy, and to go over the service from last week and look forward to the service next week.
Yeah, Randy, it's great to be here. It's good to be with everyone. And I also look forward to our conversations. They seems like it always helps me to learn something new or to realize something I hadn't thought about. So it is a great discipline to be here and a gift to be here.
You're in the midst of a very interesting sermon series. Here at Methodist Temple, we have stained glass windows on both sides of the sanctuary. And on one side, you have the Beatitudes, and on the other side, the parables of Jesus. And so you are into your sermon series on the Beatitudes. And so what kind of feedback are you getting on it?
People are excited about them. They enjoy looking at the stained glass and reflecting on the meaning. And I think really the thing that's happening within the congregation is that it's helping them to experience the sanctuary as an even more of a sacred space where they can connect with the Spirit and connect with God. And, you know, you come into worship, you walk past these windows every Sunday, year after year, you never really thought about it. But now, you know, you're helping folks enter into it in a more intentional way. That's the feedback I'm really getting. Now, in terms of just the conversations about the Beatitudes, I'm trying to, like, as I always do, I'm not going to try to look at them in a more like a predictable way.
Right.
I'm trying to look at them in a new way. What can they teach us about life today in the modern context?
Okay. So your passage today would include Matthew 5, 1 to 4. Of course, Matthew 5 is the beginning of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, which goes through the 7th chapter, and Jesus starts with these Beatitudes. So let me just read the first four verses. When Jesus saw the crowds, he went up to the mountain, and after he sat down, his disciples came to him, and he began to speak and taught them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted." Of course, it goes on. There are 9 Beatitudes, but we are to this point right now. So this is Jesus seeing the crowds, and then he goes up onto a mountain. The mountain is an important place for Jesus. Jesus likes being on top of mountains. He likes to pray there, and apparently he likes to teach there. Mm-hmm. And so the text says that he sat down, and that we stand up to preach, but rabbis sit down to teach. And his disciples came to him. And so much of Jesus' life was spent teaching his disciples.
Yeah. In this moment in Matthew's gospel, Jesus is really being presented as like a new Moses. The context of Matthew's gospel, most scholars would tell you that the world in the first century context had been turned upside down, and the gospel writer Matthew is presenting Jesus in such a way that Jesus is helping the people see what it means to be a child of God in the midst of a world that's been turned upside down. And that's what the Beatitudes are doing, really. You know, these things are kind of like, really, I'm blessed if I'm poor in spirit? Really? I'm blessed if I'm mourning? And the point that Jesus is making in the Beatitudes here is, yeah, God's on our side. Whenever our world has fallen apart and we're mourning our losses, God, we got to remember God is on our side. And so that's what's kind of happening here. Just really quick snippet of historical context. And so Jesus is, again, being presented as a new Moses. And so, yeah. Anyway,
there's definitely the connection to Moses. The mountain tells us that, yes, that the writer wants us to think about Moses. There are 5 major speeches in Matthew, the 5 books of the Torah. And so the Torah, we think about it, that as the law, but a better translation is instruction. Mm-hmm. And so here's Jesus instructing like Moses instructed. Yep. And he begins with these Beatitudes. You started your sermon last Sunday relating a story about taking your wife Leslie to Ligoti. I think it might be a good way to start our time together.
Okay. Yeah. I'll tell that story again, I guess. So I grew up in Ligoti, Indiana, and I moved there when I was 3 years old, moved away when I was 24 years old. So that's my formative years are in Ligoti. And so when people ask me, where are you from? Ligoti. My family hasn't lived there for a long time now, but I always look back at that period of my life as, you know, this is my hometown, I guess you could say. In any case, after I got married, my wife, Leslie, had heard me talk a lot about Ligoti in my sermons and different things. And she's like, I want to see it. Okay, well, I take her to see Ligoti one day. And went to my old church. I showed her the parsonage that I grew up in. My dad's a pastor, so I showed him the parsonage I grew up in. And then elementary schools I went to. And the funny thing about Ligoti was not much had changed. And then the one thing that had changed a lot is me, because I'd been gone for 20 years. Anyway, it became really apparent when we went to see my third grade teacher, Miss Ackerman. She was someone that I just love, dearly love. In terms of favorite teachers, she's one of the tops for me. And on a whim, I went to her house, knocked on the door, and she was home. And she's like, oh, Andy, come on in. And so Leslie and I, we go on in, and we chit-chat for a while, and she finally asked the question, so, Andy, what do you do? And I say, well, I'm a pastor, to which my third grade teacher, Miss Ackerman, responds, really?
Because she knew you not just as a third grader. She knew you beyond third grade. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's just say at third grade, the potential might not have been there at that point. And so I use that as a segue to talk about change is a part of our lives. You know, we all change. And if change is a part of our lives, then mourning is also a part of our lives too. And mourning is, the way I would describe mourning, just kind of generally speaking, is like mourning is, and grieving, they're synonymous for me really. They're about learning to navigate the changes and transitions of our lives in helpful and positive ways.
Yeah, you can describe them as little deaths, right? Yeah. They're, because I'm, you know, and if you just think back on your own life, for instance, I'm not a teenager anymore. Mm-hmm. That part of me is gone, and you could say it's dead. That's a little death. I'll never be a teenager again. And there is mourning with each one of those.
Yes.
And moving on from it.
Yes.
Not being stuck in it.
Yes. Yeah. And I find it fascinating, this particular sermon and this topic of mourning, because I've had more response in terms of this particular talk than anyone I've had for a while, which tells me, you know, it hits something within us. How do we mourn? How do we navigate changes? We're living in a changing world in which we are all mourning something right now. Maybe it's the loss of a future that we thought we had. Maybe it's the world has changed in a way that we're having trouble being hopeful now. And so this mourning thing becomes very practical to us.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of our lives.
Yeah. I wanted to add something here from my own study. I, of course, teach my Sunday school class based on what you're going to be doing with your sermon, whether it be a text or in this case, it's still a text, but you're talking specifically about these windows. Stained glass windows, but I think it's important to let people know that anything that happens in the New Testament, while in one sense it is new, there's continuity with the Old Testament.
Yeah.
And Jesus, being a Jew, would have known the scriptures. And I thought, I wonder what the origin of these Beatitudes mm-hmm. is. And there are other Beatitudes. And I found one that I really liked from Jeremiah. And Jeremiah says, blessed, this is a beatitude, blessed are those who trust in the Lord, whose trust is in the Lord. They shall be like a tree planted by water, sending out its roots by the stream. It shall not fear when heat comes, and its leaves shall stay green. In the year of drought, it is not anxious, and it does not cease to bear fruit. And so I thought that was a good description of the Beatitudes and what it means to be blessed. You're not blessed because you do a certain thing. If you're planted next to the source, you're already blessed to the point where you don't even get worried about a drought. Because you are connected, you're going to continue to bear fruit. And there are other, you know, Beatitudes throughout Scripture. So I love it when I can find those, the continuity between the Old Testament and the New Testament.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And many of the Beatitudes we have in the Sermon on the Mount go back to Psalms and Proverbs and different things like that. And as you were talking about the relationship between the New and the Old Testament, one way I would describe it is like the New Testament is like commentary on the Old Testament. You know, it's just, it's the Hebrew Bible applied
right
through a Christian lens, basically. And so, yeah, there's going to be different parallels and connections. Absolutely. That's a good passage there, though.
Mm-hmm. So we do go through the kind of a change you've been talking about all the time. I mean, change is constant. And we mourn that change. And so you said, you know, you might be thinking, I'm grieving and I've prayed and I'm just not feeling it.
Yeah. That's so common, isn't it?
Yeah.
People think, well, they go back to the window in the church. At the bottom of the window, there's a mourner depicted kind of looking up to God. In the middle of the stained glass window, there's symbols of grief, like a willow tree, a sickle, a torch. Those are supposed to be symbols of grief. And then at the very top of the window, the mourner's like reaching up to God and God's reaching down to them. And the first thing I thought about is, you know, we've been in this situation. You've been in this situation. Anybody has, where you look at a window like that and you're like, oh, that, you know, that's beautiful. That's good. Yeah, sure. But I've reached up to God and it doesn't feel like God's reaching back to me. And that's normal, right? Like, and so sometimes trusting in God doesn't mean that we get the relief that we're looking for, essentially what I'm trying to get at. And I want to acknowledge that. I want to name in my sermon, I wanted to name that, hey, that you're not alone if that's you.
That's the human experience.
It is the human experience. And mourning is difficult and grieving is hard. And reaching out to God isn't like a magic wand where all our problems just disappear and vanish and go away.
Yeah. Transition was a big word in this sermon.
Mm-hmm. A helpful thing I've learned over the years is that change is inevitable and transition is not. So a change is like an external ending, something that's ended in our life. Could be a job, could be we went to the doctor, we got a bad health report. It could be that our church has changed, the place we work has changed, something has changed. And so a change is an ending. Now, what transition is kind of like that internal process in which we have to learn to live again in a new way in light of the change I've gone through. And so like a change can happen abruptly, and it often does. It just happens in a moment, change. What transition then becomes is, okay, this is our heart, our inner disposition, learning to live again and realign again in light of what has happened. And what I've discovered, and I'm sure you've seen this too, Randy, is that we have a lot of people in the world today who have made a lot of changes, but they haven't always transitioned well. And someone who hasn't transitioned well, a lot of times they're frustrated and they're angry. And the reason is because we're trying to live out an old set of rules when our life has changed, the world has changed around us. And so we're trying to force the way it used to be when it's just not possible anymore. And so that's why it's so important to get on this transition conversation, because it names something we all wrestle with.
And you don't have to stretch this too far to apply crucifixion and resurrection to this thing you're talking about.
Yeah, without a crucifixion, without a death, in this sense, a death to an old way of being, an old way of living, there is no new life, right? It doesn't happen yet. And a person could get stuck in that tomb for a long, long time.
Well, just as in a death, in a bodily death, mourning, grieving is so important.
Sure.
And we live such a harried life and we don't have time for death that often people don't mourn properly. But this also, the same principle applies to change. Mm-hmm. And it is appropriate when there is a change to say, okay, this has changed and that's gone, but I do need to mourn it. The newness, and that's part of living into the new, is mourning that which is gone because of change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You name it, you name what you've lost, you name what is gone. You honor it too. I'd throw that out there. It's important to honor the past. Honor our loved, you go to a cemetery, you honor a person, right? You don't just move on and that's it. That's not what we're saying. We're talking about transition and that kind of thing, especially mm-hmm. when it comes to loved ones. You want to honor them, but you don't want to stay in a place where you cannot move forward any longer. And that's the key. You have to learn to move forward.
Yeah. you identify three steps, and of course the first step is the ending.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, an ending, and then that's followed by a wilderness, and then eventually that leads to a new beginning, or and maybe in the Easter context, since we're in the season of Easter as Christians, a new beginning can also be a new life, a sense of new life. And I take that those three steps from the story of the Exodus, which is the central narrative of Scripture, really. And we all know the story. The Hebrew people are enslaved in Egypt. They cry out to God. God sends them a Moses. And in a moment, they leave Egypt, really. Or, you know, it's not a very long in terms of period of time. And they leave Egypt. And then, as the story goes, they enter into the wilderness for 40 years. And scholars will show you that it really shouldn't have taken them that long to get through the wilderness. It wasn't like the journey was a long one, you know, especially it wouldn't take them 40 years to get there. What they were doing was wandering around. They were lost.
Right.
They've left their Egypt now and they're lost. And if you look closely at the story of the Exodus, a lot of the things that they were doing, a lot of the things that happened there are, well, they begin to grumble and they begin to complain. They begin to want to go back to Egypt. And I find that to be a sign of I have not quite moved on yet. You know, I want to go back to the way it was. And the other thing that happens is that I gloss over the challenges that were. I see the past as like this glorious time. And that's what the Israelites are doing. They're like, boy, it was great in Egypt. You know, Pharaoh really took care of us. No, he didn't. Yeah. You know, but that's just what we do as humans. And so after wandering around the wilderness for quite a while, they finally get to a place where they're ready for new life. And really what happens in the story of the Israelites, though, is they have to cycle through a few generations of people before they actually can move over to the promised land. And that's a challenging idea to think about. There's some people who left Egypt, went into the wilderness, and never left. Never left.
Right.
They would not cross over. Finally, they do cross over, of course. But once you see that pattern in the story of Exodus, you can begin to see that also in our own lives. I believe that's one of the reasons why we retell that story again and again. Of course, Jewish people do that even today. I mean, up to this day, I think it's today Passover.
It is. Yesterday started, yeah.
Passover. And so we tell and retell that story. And on a basic level, it's a story about change and transition, how important it is. And so... we tell it even to the day as Christians, and it's this helpful metaphor of how organizations work, how people work, and it. I don't know. For me, it helps to be able to identify where I'm at on this journey, and you know, this change has happened. I'm in transition. You know, that kind of thing.
So the steps were ending, which sends you into the wilderness, where eventually we find a new beginning, and then you ask the question: how is it that we move into our own promised land? And first point you made was that it's helpful to have a Moses, mm-hmm. you know, someone with that kind of wisdom.
Someone to walk with us. And a Moses-type figure in a person's life when we're grieving could be a therapist, could be a pastor. But really what a good Moses-type figure does is they are someone we can entrust our grief with. We can share that pain with that person. It could be a grief group even. I've seen this happen in grief groups where people kind of come together as a community and they journey through their grief together. And what's really good to have that Moses, the reason it's so good to have that Moses type figure is like, if you don't have that place to land the pain, if you will, we have a tendency, what happens is we'll just share that wherever we go. And that's not always healthy and helpful because we end up pushing people away, of course. And so the first step really, as I think about the story of the Israelites' Exodus, is to find a Moses in their life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Second step, the Israelites sent in some spies into Canaan, and you identified that as doing your research.
Yeah, so they finally decide they're going to go into the promised land, and they say, "Well, I'll go check it out with some spies." And I feel like that's research, and also I feel like that's a little bit of that point in our life where we've been in the wilderness long enough. Now we're ready to experience and experiment with new ways of life. And that's something that's helpful to do in the midst of our grief. You know, this thing has changed, and it's good to do some research about what our options are. And then we can run some experiments. You know, you can do some things without having to be married to the new thing yet. And that second step is a helpful one, too.
And the third step is faith.
Yeah. And that's the most important for me, is God goes before us to prepare a place. It's true for the Israelites. It's true for Jesus when he talks to the disciples before he leaves the world. I should say before he ascends into God's presence, really. Jesus says to the disciples famously, don't let your hearts be troubled. Don't be afraid. I go before you to prepare a place for you. Now, this is where the theologian in me has to come out. What's that mean? Does that mean that everything that happens in my life is pre-planned and predetermined by God? You know, I could see people taking that kind of language and thinking, well, it just everything happens for a reason. The reason's God. And as a Wesleyan theologian, as a Methodist theologian, I don't believe that. I see God much more relationally. When I say God is going before us to prepare a place for us, what I'm saying is that God's walking with me through this life, inviting me to respond in faith, inviting me to respond in love. And so there's a much more interactive type of understanding of what that means.
Absolutely. I'm glad you brought that up because people will say that everything happens for a reason. Something tragic happens in somebody's life, and they try to wrap their mind around that. How could that thing happen? Well, there must be some kind of a reason, because God is the one that controls everything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we just can't go there. You know, that takes us to places and defines God in a way that we really don't want to end up with that kind of a definition. Does it make it a little bit harder to understand what has happened?
Yeah.
You know, it does. Yeah. But again, we've talked about this so many times. We wrestle with it. And you mentioned relationships. So relationally, dialogue, we work with it.
Yeah. I mean, it's such an important, we call it theodicy, the problem with pain and evil and tragic things that happen in our lives. This is such an important thing for us to think about as a people of faith. And I would even go as far to say it might be one of the number one reasons why people walk away from the faith is because they've been presented with this idea of God that has said God's all-knowing, God's all-powerful. What all-powerful means is that God can do anything that God wants to do. And then, oh, by the way, God's all loving, right? And so that all sounds good until you get a cancer diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you're thinking, well, if God can do anything, then why doesn't, and God loves me, why doesn't God fix that?
Right.
And that's the big question.
Yeah. So God goes with us. You brought up Dr. Ken Millard.
Right.
And do we need to get you some water? I don't know if we have any in the room, but
I don't know. I've got allergies, and so I'm sorry if folks are hearing me cough a little bit in the background. You know,
that's okay.
I just can't shake it. Okay. Yeah. So
that's all right. I didn't know Dr. Millard, but this is not the first time you've referred to him in a sermon.
He really impacted my life. Yeah, he was a continues to be a pastor, but at the time in which I met him, originally I met him in seminary. He taught it. A one-off, just a class, and I really was inspired by what he had to say, and then later on it developed a friendship kind of relationship with him, but he was the pastor at St. Luke's United Methodist Church in Indianapolis, which is, at that time, was one of the largest, and continues to be one of the largest United Methodist churches in the country, and he had to retire early because his wife was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, and so loses one of the largest United Methodist churches. And then a few months later, loses his wife. And so what does he do? Well, Millard decides to go out and preach on the importance of generosity and gratitude. And as a young pastor, I heard that he was doing this, and I was serving a church in Tell City, Indiana, and I reached out to Kent, and I said, hey, would you come preach for us? And he said, absolutely. And I was shocked because, you know, we're just a small church on the river.
Right.
And he was willing to go out of his way to come preach at our congregation. And The night he showed up, really, it changed my life. Because the stories you tell and retell are the ones that impacted you.
Right.
And he pulls in our driveway, and the best as I can describe it, he is like he was shot out of the positive cannon. And I said, what is going on? But he walks in, he's like, it's so great to be here. So great to be with you. And he says, show me the church. So we walk him over the church, and he's like, this is such a wonderful church. They're so lucky to have you as the pastor. You and your wife and your family are so lucky. And then we go down to a restaurant there downtown Tell City, and it was an okay meal. It wasn't a bad meal. It was like the best meal he ever had. And finally I said, Kent, what's your secret? And he kind of smiles and says, I spend an hour a day with God, and I try to find something to affirm in every situation. And folks, that's discipline, right? What's discipline? Well, discipline is I'm going to get enough control over my life in which I can stay on the right track. And that's what he did there. You know, it's not going to be easy for him to do that. He's a lot. He could be upset about, angry about, and I'm sure he's experiencing those emotions, but he chose to spend time with God. He chose to find the new signs of life that kept him going through the wilderness.
Yeah, it's not that he moved on past the death of his wife. He, as we've been talking, he properly mourned the death of his life, but he didn't let that defeat him.
No.
He saw a new life after that.
Yeah, I mean, we all wonder about, what's God's will for my life? That's a question anyone that believes in God is going to ask. And the scripture is actually very specific, fairly specific on this. Like in the end of 1 Thessalonians, Paul says, give thanks in all circumstances, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus for you. Mm-hmm. That's about as direct as you get. And that's what Kent embodied. Yeah. And some people are going to be like, well, you know, that could be like a toxic positivity and these kinds of things. I don't think so. No. I can tell you, Randy, from my own life, the type of leaders and the type of people I want to be around are the people who are celebrating the gifts, even when it would be easy not to. Mm-hmm. They encourage, they empower. Anyone can sit around and come up with everything that's wrong. And anyone can sit around and talk about what's wrong with the world or name all the losses we've gone through. We've all gone through a lot. And some people have gone through a tremendous amount of loss. We don't want to discount that. But even then, we have a choice. And the choice here that Millard offered was gratitude.
Yeah. You transitioned into the situation here at Methodist Temple. And you talk about change and stuff happens and stuff has happened here in the last few years.
We've gone through a lot of changes, and dare I say, we're still transitioning in many different ways. 7-8 years ago, I became the lead pastor here, and at that time, I had some people wanting to go out to lunch with me and talk to me. What's your plan, you know? And I remember one conversation fairly vividly. I was talking to a leader of our church, and I said, "Look, 10 years from now, if we average 300 worship, it'll be a miracle." And I based that upon, like, at the time when our average age of our congregation was, and then the cultural changes that Christianity is going through, just a lot of different factors. And then also I knew about the denominational challenges we were going to have that obviously became very divisive. And so I said to them, "Look, if we have 300 an average worship 10 years, that's going to be a miracle." Well, a couple weeks ago, we had 270, and we're holding right in there. We're close to a miracle.
Right.
And I just lift that up as a new sign of life that we should celebrate. Yes, things have changed. Yes, this transition's not always been an easy one. I acknowledge all those things, but here's a sign of new life. And there's other things in our congregation we should celebrate. I mean, Mayor Stephanie Terry was at our men's breakfast just this past weekend, and she shared about her hopes and dreams for the city of Evansville. And our men at the church now are going to adopt a park in the city of Evansville to try to piggyback on some of the things that she hopes to do as a mayor. And I find that to be very encouraging. And then also our kids ministry here. I can go on and on about just different things that have happened. And so, you know, we're in this season of change and transition, sure. But the important thing is continue to move forward, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. Keep celebrating the new signs of life.
Yeah, well, I heard a great analogy just this morning. I was just coming into work. You know, there's dystopia kind of worlds. There's utopia worlds, and there's the protopia type of world. And I, as a pastor, really immediately went to the church or even an organization. There's dystopia organizations where everything's wrong.
Right.
There's this idea that I think sometimes we hold on to, that there's a utopia organizations where everything's right.
They tried that twice in New Harmony. That didn't work.
Didn't work. No, yeah. And utopia never works because life never becomes the same. And we never get to that place of absolute perfection where there's nothing left to do, which is what a protopia society / organization is. It's one that's saying, hey, you know, yeah, things have changed. Yeah, we're in transition. But yes, we're going to continue to move forward. here are those new signs of life. Here's where we're going to build. I just find that to be a very helpful way of thinking about not only just leadership, but also just my own personal life.
Yeah. How about this Sunday? Can you give us a short preview? I know it's, what is this, Tuesday? So you're probably not finished with your sermon, but I'm sure you've been working on it, praying about it, writing.
So this, the Beatitude is, blessed are the meek, they will inherit the earth. And the one thing I can say about this sermon this weekend is like the meek that Jesus is talking about in this Beatitude, the meek are not the weak. They're not weak. In our English way of thinking about meekness today, it's like, I'm going to roll over, I'm just going to take it, and all these kinds of things. Nope, that's not meekness as Jesus defines it. It's not weakness. It's a person who's disciplined their lives, back to Kent Millard, disciplined their lives in such a way that they care about the right sort of things. That's meekness, if I just really define it in a simple way. And so what it's the invitation is to to understand what that meekness really is, what it looks like, and that's what I hope to talk about this weekend.
Okay, and we'll close on this, because speaking of transitions, our church is in transition. Every church everywhere is always in transition, but our larger church, the United Methodist Church, is going to be in transition. Just today, the General Conference of the United Methodist Church is convening for the first time since 2019. And so I'll let you say a little bit about that, but the reason why I bring it up is y'all might want to be back here next week for the podcast.
Yeah, because we're going to do, I'm sure we'll end up doing a debrief of what happens this week, and it goes on into next week. But my hunch is some of the big stuff will happen this week as we meet as a general conference. So General Conference, in terms of United Methodism, is the highest legislative body of our denomination. They set church law. If you want to use another phrase, they're the policy-making body that makes the rules for the whole denomination. And the podcast listeners, I'm sure you all will know that the big conversation in Methodism for the last 50 or so years has been around same-sex marriage, the ordination of homosexual persons. These have been the big questions. And so it's likely that this General Conference is going to change our longstanding stance on gay marriages in the life of the church and ordination of openly homosexual persons into ministry. And that's going to be a big change, and it's going to be a season of transition. Here at Methodist Temple, we've been going through this for a while. That's one of the things that I was alluding to when I was talking about the congregation, but I didn't really name. But it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out this week with what they come up with as a general conference, but also what that's going to mean for local congregations. Congregations are still divided over this conversation. I'm not going to say Methodist Temple. We don't all agree on this one.
Right.
At Methodist Temple, even. I'm very much in favor of being a pastor to all people, and I think the listeners know what that means. But I also understand that there's people that don't share those same views with me, and it's going to be interesting to see as we move ahead, because after this change will come another wilderness, right? And then it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And I just hope that we can continue to find ways to be in community with one another, serve with one another, and not let this pull us apart even farther.
Yeah.
That's the last thing the world needs from our church, from the churches, but yet that's what's happened to us. And anyway, I don't know. I'm getting kind of emotional about it.
Yeah.
It's been a long haul.
Oh, yeah. And we're finally here. Finally here after all of those delays.
Yeah. And I'm getting messages from people in the congregation, you know, when's it going to come up? When's the sexuality conversation going to, I don't know what day it's going to come up. You know?
Well, I mean, technology's great. For instance, I'm off because I'm injured, but I've got some time probably this afternoon to pull up the stream and watch it. So they're streaming all of it. So it's available for those who are interested in half the time. It's there. And I'll probably, just like I spent a lot of time watching the Masters golf tournament, I'll probably spend a lot of time, you know, streaming this.
Yeah.
Two very different things. I'm really speaking about my availability, which is I have more availability now than I generally do. But yeah, come back next week, and we'll
try to put what together. What we've learned at that point. Right? I mean, people think that that's the only thing we're going to talk about this general conference, and it's not. I mean,
right.
There's things going to come up, I think, about the pastor's pension plans. And other things like that, that's going to have a long-term effect where we're going.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Pastor Andy, it's been good. I know you have to move on, and so do I. And I know, listeners, you have other things to do as well, but we so much value your time, the time that you give to us, just to listen to what we have to say as we consider last week's text and then next week's text as well, and the life of the church and the life of faith. So y'all have a good week, and we'll see you next week.
This has been the Pastor Podcast with Randy and Andy. You are welcome to join us at Methodist Temple in person or online. Methodist Temple is at 2109 Lincoln Avenue in Evansville, Indiana. Our traditional Sunday morning worship service is at 8:30 with our contemporary service at 11. Log on to our website at methodisttemple.church. We see Christ in you.